Natural World, presented by David Attenborough. An evergreen forest under a blanket of snow.
The Jura Mountains on the French-Swiss border are in the grip of winter. The ground has been frozen solid for months. This is a tough place in which to live.
I'm told that clearings like these could be the home of a real giant. At this time of the year, it'll be in hiding.
Mounds in the snow.
But evidence of its existence, these strange mounds, is everywhere.
Inside here, deep down and protected from the cold, the giant is asleep.
Beneath the thatch of spruce needles lies a maze of tunnels and chambers, the home of hibernating wood ants. Individually, they are tiny, but they're members of a giant super colony. When temperatures rise, over 500 million of them will emerge and dominate this landscape.
A mound crawling with ants.
Scientists are only just working out how ants manage to survive up here. But in fact, there's a much greater and more profound mystery that has brought me up this mountain.
Among ants, cooperation between colonies is very rare. Warfare is common. Yet these nests over a great area live at peace with one another.
This may sound like an epic tale of war and peace, but does it also contain an echo of human nature?
These ants, in some extraordinary way, have exchanged war for peace. It's now recognized as one of the largest of all insect super societies.
And its very existence conflicts with some of the laws of evolution as we presently understand them.
A thin mist hanging over the mountains. Attenborough and the Empire of the Ants.
It's been a long, cold winter here in the Swiss Jura Mountains. It's hard to believe that any insect could survive in this frozen landscape. But now change is in the air.
Water dripping from a branch.
Soon, ant nests all over this mountain will come to life. Some of these mounds are independent colonies, but others are part of one huge super colony. Over the coming months, I'll be looking at the differences between these two wood ant societies, one that wages war with all its neighbours and the other which welcomes them and lives at peace.
Faint sunlight shining through the branches of a tree, one of the earthy mounds now exposed.
As the grip of winter eases, sentries emerge from the mounds to check on conditions.
One of the brown and black ants waving its antennae.
They detect the sign that they've been waiting for. The temperatures are rising. Spring is on the way.
Many more wood ants emerging tentatively from the carpet of spruce needles.
The ants survive the winter thanks to their own central heating system. Warmth given off by the slow decomposition of the dead vegetation in the nest's fabric. And that prevented them all from freezing. Now, by swarming all over the surface of the nest, they're recharging their batteries, absorbing heat directly from the sun's rays.
The mound up close as the colony of ants scuttle across its surface. David's crouching nearby.
This behaviour only happens over one or two days in the early spring. The worker ants have emerged into the sunshine and are now clumping together. And they're not just sunbathing it could well be that the ultraviolet rays of the sun cure them of any infections from viruses or fungi that may have happened during their long sleep underground. You can almost feel the enthusiasm with which these little creatures are enjoying their sunbathe.
The ants crawl over and around each other. David points out one that's larger than the rest.
This is unusual enough, but now here is something truly extraordinary. There is a queen.
She's almost twice the size of her subjects. She's also the most important member of her family.
And what's more, there's another.
To see a queen exposed and vulnerable outside the nest is very rare indeed.
There's one.
He spots more queens.
And there's another. Shining wonderfully in the sunshine.
A normal wood ant nest usually has just a single queen who lays all the eggs. But clearly, this is not so here.
There's another. Several of them. Amazing.
One of the queen ants is surrounded by workers who impede her path.
After a few moments in the sunshine, the only time they see daylight in the whole year, the queens disappear and make their way back to the brood chambers deep in the nest.
One worker appears to be leading a queen, their mouthparts connected.
Those unwilling to go are dragged back. We may call them queens, but there's no sovereign rule here. The workers govern by consensus, and they decide when and where the queens will go.
The queen seems reluctant, pushing back against her companion's efforts.
There may be hundreds of queens in this single nest, and there are over 1,000 such mounds as this, all interconnected. So,
across the supercolony, there may be as many as 1 million queens.
Though there's still snow on the ground, the trees are green once again.
It's now early April. The queens return below to prepare for the egg-laying, started a race against the clock. They must complete their most important work below in the next 2 months.
Inside the mound.
Using infrared light, which is invisible to the ants, we can watch them inside their nest without disturbing them.
An ant's pulsating abdomen.
Most of the first eggs to be laid will produce the next generation of breeding individuals, the queens and the males, both of whom will have wings. Inside the 1,000 nests of the supercolony, over 500 million mostly unrelated worker ants cooperate to ensure that the queens and the males will be ready for their mating flights in mid-June.
An ant tending to a clutch of pale, almost translucent eggs.
With all these developments on the way, it's imperative that the workers collect more food as soon as possible. But many of the mounds are still surrounded by snow, so the workers can't reach their feeding grounds.
They turn back where their rock meets the snow.
But there's something they can collect. Heat. The nest needs more heat than that which comes from the rotting vegetation, if the eggs are to hatch in time for their June appointment. Now, however, the ants have another source of warmth.
Speeded up footage of clouds scudding across a blue sky.
Using their bodies as solar panels, the ants harvest the sunlight. We have a heat-sensitive camera that detects differences in temperature. The nest appears black because it's hotter than the surrounding environment. It shows a similar difference in the ants. Those going down into the nest are black because they've been heated by the sun, whereas those coming out are white because they're cold, having transferred their body heat to their charges in the brood chambers below. It's this kind of selfless collaboration that is the key to success of any ant colony.
David's standing beside one of the mounds.
In normal ant colonies, all the workers are related to one another and to the queen. And the theory is that that is why they all cooperate. But that is not the case here.
There are hundreds of queens here. Over 1,000 have been counted in a single nest. So all the workers can't have the same parents, and genetics have confirmed that this is so. It's this cooperation between unrelated ants in a single colony that appears to be rewriting the rules of insect evolution. But we still don't really know how this has come about.
Time-lapse footage of melting snow, revealing grass and shoots.
Spring is now well on the way. The snow has disappeared and colour comes to the meadows.
The mounds are now surrounded by green and brown grasses, dotted with delicate flowers in white and lilac. Infrared footage of one of the brood chambers.
By late April, there are piles of eggs in the nest, and the first larvae are hatching.
Small, white, legless grubs.
The workers labour unceasingly to ensure that the growing brood will be ready to emerge in 6 weeks' time, at the peak of the short Jura summer.
The worker ants tending to the larvae, as well as the unhatched eggs. An aerial view of the tree-lined slopes.
But not every ant nest on this mountain can be so focused. Some will soon have to deal with threats to their very survival. Just a short distance away, on the borders of the supercolony's woodland territory, there are other wood ants.
The mounds here, on this side of the mountain, look exactly the same as those of the supercolony. And so do the ants themselves.
The inhabitants of each nest here are all the offspring of its single queen, and the colonies compete aggressively with one another.
David's in a meadow, standing between two mounds that are several feet apart.
After the winter hibernation, the territories between that nest over there and this one here have become blurred, and the frontier has to be re-established. And in order to do that, workers from both nests are now scouring the ground. And that brings neighbouring ants into contact for the first time this season.
An ant silhouetted on a leaf.
When foragers from the different nests meet, they immediately recognise that they're from rival families. They then dash back to their nests, and within minutes, both colonies know that territory on their frontier is being disputed. Armies assemble.
Ants moving quickly across the grass and the small plants growing amongst it. The rival factions clash, grappling with their forelegs and mouthparts, and some get involved in group skirmishes. David's lying on his front, watching.
This is war. And the weapons being used are chemical. Formic acid. I can smell it in the air. They're squirting it from the ends of their abdomen. And if they can bite their opponents so that the
formic acid gets beneath the outer shell of an ant, it will dissolve its internal organs.
As the battle rages, one pair of ants lock jaws, waving their antennae.
As they grapple, each tries to restrain its opponent by clamping its jaws around a leg or an antenna.
Four ants restrain an enemy worker.
Soldiers from both sides tug at their opponent's limbs.
All across the meadow, group fights are taking place in a wave of scuttling limbs.
It can take seven ants to subdue a single enemy. One holds each leg, and the seventh uses its mandibles to cut open sections of their opponent's exoskeleton, exposing the insides. An attacker brings forward its abdomen under its body and squirts acid onto its victim.
The grisly procedure.
Battles are going on everywhere.
The ground swarming with wood ants.
Each colony carries its own chemical badge, invisible to our eyes but clear to the ants' sensitive antennae. Fighters touch each other to confirm whose side they're on.
Different pairs feeding each other's bodies.
Here and there, individuals clamber up the vegetation.
One on a blue flower.
Are they having a rest? Or are they surveying progress to see where help is needed?
The ant on the blue flower surveys the scene around it, waving its antennae gently. It hangs from a petal by one leg, then jumps down and rejoins the fray.
The smell of formic acid reaches the colony, and more ants from both sides run to join the battle.
One ant squirting liquid from its abdomen. Ants moving rapidly over the grass, like a rippling carpet.
These wars can continue for over a week. At their peak, many thousands are fighting and thousands are killed.
David's still lying on his front, taking in the action. One group of ants work together to take down a foe, and another ant bites an enemy's body. One pair tussle on a leaf amongst the mayhem.
The victors will certainly have enlarged their territory. But some say they have also gained other rewards.
They're taking off the bodies of their victims and carrying them back to the nest over there to feast upon them.
It's calmer now, and ants are carrying the dead bodies of their kind.
Both sides have suffered heavy losses. For the ants in the meadow, it has been a costly start to the year.
A dismembered ant on its back, its limbs twitching, rising up above the spruce trees.
Higher up the mountain, in the territory of the supercolony, the inhabitants of different nests are also meeting. But here, things are very different.
These ants come from a mound about half a mile away. If that mound was a separate, independent colony, then these, when they land there, will be savagely attacked. But let's see what happens.
David uses a fine paintbrush to remove the alien ant from a glass jar and deposit it on the rock next to the local.
At first, the resident ant makes an aggressive gesture.
It rears up and makes a lunge.
But then the other strokes the first's antennae. That gesture is a request for food, and the other obligingly feeds her.
Their mouths are locked together.
This behaviour, known as trophallaxis, is in itself not unusual. Most ants do it at times. What is unique is that these ants are almost certainly unrelated, yet they treat each other as if they were from the same nest. They do this because they share the supercolony scent, a chemical signature that is transferred together with the food.
They brush each other with their forelegs and antennae.
In one experiment, scientists fed a distinctive chemical to a nest on one side of the supercolony, and 8 weeks later, that same chemical appeared far away on the other side. It's this sharing of food between over half a billion individuals that makes this super society so truly remarkable.
The pair part ways. Ants moving near a shaded mound in grassy woodland.
Because of this, super colony ants can move freely between mounds, and they have, as a result, created over 100 kilometres of trails that link over 1,000 nests. These trails not only allow the ants to make new nests deep in the forest, they also give all the members of the supercolony access to resources of great value to them.
Ants scaling a tree covered in lichen.
It comes from the spruce trees.
Wood ants crawling over the rough, textured bark, exploring the spruce tree's furrows and crevices. David's standing near a low-hanging branch.
The ants don't feed directly on the spruce trees. They become farmers. And these are their flocks, aphids. The presence of the ants keeps insect predators at bay, so the aphids can feed unmolested. They drink the tree's sap and excrete what they don't need as a sugary liquid called honeydew. And the ants love it.
The plump yellow aphids are clustered amongst the spruce needles. An ant brushes one with its antennae.
Just as human farmers milk their cows, so the ants stroke the aphids with their antennae to persuade them to release their honeydew.
The ants lift glistening beads of clear liquid from the aphids' rear ends to their own mouths.
Once the aphids are milked and the ants have drunk as much honeydew as they can carry, they head down the tree, abdomens bulging, and return to the nest.
The abdomens of the returning ants are swollen and almost translucent.
The honeydew is not only food with which to sustain themselves. Some use it to raise the heat of their bodies well above normal and so warm the atmosphere within the nest, a valuable ability in the fickle climate of the Jura. The spruce trees themselves also produce a substance that the ants can use directly.
One carries a lump of white matter.
These ants have collected little flakes of resin. That's a sort of gum that oozes from the broken twig of a coniferous tree. The tree uses it to seal off an injury. But what are the ants using it for?
Inside the nest, the extra warmth produced by honeydew helps the queens to keep laying and the larvae to keep growing.
Ants engaging in trophallaxis and feeding the larvae.
However, constant warmth can create problems. Despite regular cleaning, diseases can thrive. The ants have a remarkable solution to that problem.
An ant with a chunk of resin.
They cover the surface of the mounds with tiny nuggets of resin and also take it into the chambers below. One nest contained over 4 kilos of it. It is, in fact, ant medicine. The ants combine acid from their bodies with the resin and so produce a very effective antibiotic. This is one of the most sophisticated animal pharmacologies known to science. It's been shown that wood ants living in nests that contain resin are better able to survive diseases than those that don't, and their eggs are far less likely to be infected by fungi.
Speeded up footage of the sun moving across the sky.
This immense, peaceful super colony has few enemies. But now, at the end of May, a new threat has arrived.
Cows crossing the meadow, some brown, others black and white.
The Jura is famous for producing some of Europe's finest cheese.
They have bells around the necks.
For generations, farmers have made small clearings in the woods to create meadows where cattle can graze. Only now is it warm enough for cows to be brought up to these high pastures.
They graze on the grass and on low-hanging foliage.
Somehow, the ants need to make sure that they're left alone and that nothing damages their nests. And that's a considerable challenge, even for a super colony.
Ants swarming over one of the earthy mounds. A pair of cows come over to investigate, and one of their bells scrapes the nest.
But these ants are very determined. When one squirts its acid, others follow suit.
The attack up close. Thin jets of formic acid and droplets flying through the air.
The result is a coordinated barrage.
The curious cows start lifting their heads, acid shooting in all directions as the ants carry out their defensive volley.
The cows are not harmed, but they do get a dose of acid in the nose, which they don't like, and they tend thereafter to avoid these mounds.
The cows move away from the nest. In a brood chamber, ants are tending to the swollen larvae.
By now, in June, the larvae have become big and greedy. They must be given special care because they will produce the next generation of royalty. So the workers labour hard to meet their demands. In summer, hundreds of thousands of eggs are hatching every day, and honeydew is not enough. The ants go in search of something else, a supplement, fresh meat.
A bee lands on a flower.
The lush green hills and mountains of the Jura are now teeming with all sorts of life, and nearly all of it is potential food.
In slow motion, a butterfly with speckled orange and black wings alighting on a stem, a wood ant scuttling close to the ground, then a fly up close, rubbing its forelegs and washing its face. More ants down below.
The ants spread out from the nest, scouring every square inch of the ground in search of prey.
As a bee feeds on a lilac flower, an ant reaches up towards it. The fly takes off, and so does one of the butterflies.
As the hunters approach, those that can take flight.
A butterfly and bee taking off in slow motion. A scuttling ant moves right over a woodlouse, which stays still.
The ant's vision is not very acute. They can only see a target if it moves.
An ant on lookout.
A wolf spider, however, can see the ants clearly. But as long as she doesn't move, they won't know that she's here.
Motionless, The wolf spider clings to the underside of a pink flower amongst several others.
She's carrying a little sack full of eggs.
The wood ants dart across the ground, littered with stones, moss and other plant matter, while the spider waits above. She moves up a stem.
She decides to run for it, and her sudden movement alerts the hunters.
She moves quickly from flowerhead to flowerhead, then remains motionless. An ant is on her tail, feeling its way across the petals. Its antennae brush her leg, and she leaps to the ground. The ants give chase.
That first fleeting touch by an ant left a faint scent mark, and now fellow hunters can home in on their target.
The spider scuttles ahead.
The spider has a venomous bite, but that is no use now. Eight powerful legs are her only hope. But her speed is the very thing that enables the ants to follow her.
She rests on a large rock, giving some ants the slip, but one comes at her from above.
Slow motion reveals the basic ant hunting technique. Lunge with jaws open and hope for the best.
As the ant launches itself downwards, the wolf spider deftly scuttles out of the way, and the hunter tumbles down the rock face and onto the soil. The spider darts across the ground.
At last, an ant manages to grab her.
More hunters pile in.
Like a pride of lions taking down a buffalo, the ants surround her. Two restrain their catch, while another delivers the flesh-dissolving acid.
She tries to keep them at bay with her legs, but the ants overpower their quarry. They start to drag her away.
The wolf spider is just one of many victims.
Other catches being transported: a large, shiny black beetle and a green insect with a segmented body.
Alone, an ant can take only the smallest prey, but by working as a team, they can capture creatures many times their size.
The wood ants working together to take the various insects into their nest. One ant carrying a body part by itself, then beetles and butterflies arriving.
A super colony can make hundreds of millions of kills every year. Beetles, caterpillars, worms, flies, they will tackle almost any living thing.
A bee moving gradually in the thronging mass of ants, then a long-legged spider being carried over moss. More hunters tearing a dead moth apart, and others carrying a plump caterpillar.
Whatever the prey, it's first cut up and eaten by the workers, who then regurgitate it to feed to the larvae.
The ants administering food. Their charges are still plump and white, with segmented bodies.
Once they have grown to full size, the larvae spin silk cocoons for themselves.
The cocoons form a smooth white layer, shaped like a rounded cylinder.
Inside each, a featureless larva is changing into an adult. Their time in the sun is approaching.
Worker ants scuttling over the cocoons and moving them around the brood chamber. The spruce forest in a thin grey light.
Wood ants live in one of the most highly organised and complex of insect societies. They fight wars over territory, they hunt in packs and farm other species. They build complex homes with central heating, they produce their own medicine. And one group of them, we now know, has made another advance.
The super colony has extended this collaboration beyond the frontiers of the family to form a super society of such dimensions that we can perhaps begin to compare it with that other great social creature on this planet, ourselves.
People studying the origins of human culture suggest that shared myths were one of the factors that bound early human societies together. But what about ants?
Well, in many species, it is certainly the case that all the individuals are very closely related to one another. But that is not so in the super colony. And in some days in June, such colonies continue to break the rules.
Yellow and purple flowers in bloom.
As midsummer approaches, the Jura briefly becomes a paradise of wild flowers. And something new appears inside each of the nests. Wings. The royal generation, male and female, has finally hatched, and both will be able to fly.
Winged individuals are the only ones that are capable of breeding. The males are little more than animated insemination devices, and they will soon achieve their purpose and die. But the females, which are emerging just now, this is the beginning of a long life of servitude.
The winged ants join the workers on the mound.
When the weather is just right, sunny and not too windy, the nests suddenly become covered with winged ants. There's an excitement in the air.
One of the winged ants making its way over the spruce needles. Another has found a vantage point on a leaf.
The males, which have matte black bodies, are incapable of feeding themselves. So once they leave the nest, they only have a short time to live. There's no time to waste. The virgin queens, who are also black but splendidly shiny, have a rather clumsy beginning to their lives. They're heavy with fat reserves and swollen ovaries, so that getting airborne is not easy for them. This is the most important flight of their lives, but it's also their first.
One takes a tumble.
Many test their wings before takeoff. They may need several attempts before they achieve complete flight control.
An ant flapping its wings furiously before eventually taking off from its leafy perch. Others beating their wings and taking flight.
Over a few days, 500,000 winged ants of both sexes take to the air and head off for new territory.
The departing ants up close, their transparent wings glistening in the sunlight. Soaring over the Jura forest, a clearing breaks the covering of trees.
They then all assemble here, in the heart of the supercolony.
It's not clear how they find this meadow, but year after year, virgin males and females from across the supercolony are drawn here for their nuptial flight.
Winged ants flying across the clearing, catching the light as they flutter and glide. In slow motion, one of them alights on a blade of grass.
The queens congregate in small patches of taller plants and begin to release sex pheromones, airborne chemicals that attract males.
Clinging to the blade, she flaps her wings. Another queen does the same, flexing one of her hind legs.
Detecting this scent on the wind, the males home in on the females.
A black male ant climbing a blade of grass, waving its antennae. A female folds back her wings as a male tries to mount her.
The virgin queens may only get the chance to mate once, and they need to obtain enough sperm to fertilize the eggs they will be producing for years to come. But with plenty of males in the meadow, they can afford to be choosy. The males are so driven, they even try to mate with females who are already doing so.
One coupling is disturbed by another male. Three pairs of mating wood ants nestled in tall grass, their antennae waving. A couple up close, the male's abdomen curved round to meet the female's.
Those males fortunate enough to couple quickly make the most of their few remaining hours of life.
A male ant descends to the ground.
Once they've mated, their service to the colony is over and they die of exhaustion.
A male, quite still, its wings and legs trembling. Another lying on its back near a bustling trail of workers.
The queens now have no further use for their wings, and they try to get rid of them. But they are, necessarily, rather firmly fixed.
One of the queens climbs to the top of a plant and reaches around with her hind legs.
Trying to remove a backpack with your feet, even if you have six of them, is clearly a frustrating process.
She rubs at her veined, transparent wings, turning around on top of the plant as she struggles. She continues, but they still seem to be firmly fixed. A couple of papery wings lying amongst the undergrowth.
Eventually, the meadow is marked with little drifts of discarded wings.
One's caught by the wind.
Such breeding swarms are fairly typical of ants generally. But now the queens of the super colony do something much less common.
David's walking through one of the clearings.
To understand why they behave so differently, we must first return to the spring battlefields of the ordinary wood ants outside the empire of the super colony.
Now, he's standing near a mound in the shade of a spruce.
The warring colonies on this side of the mountain have now accepted their frontiers, and summer brings a brief pause in their battles. The mating system they use may seem at first sight to be the same as that of the super colony, but in fact, it's fundamentally different. Every decision taken by a mated female is fraught with danger.
A wood ant queen moving slowly through the grass.
The colony this queen comes from is at war with all its neighbours. So if she meets any of them, they will try to kill her. She needs a home, but she can't build it without help. Her solution to the problem is extraordinary and radical.
She continues, proceeding cautiously, her antennae waving. A rock up ahead.
Under this rock, a different species, field ants, have built a nest. These small ants, less than a third of her size, are common and live in meadows on the edge of the forest. The only way this wood ant queen can get her own nest is by taking over one of theirs. She will become a parasitic queen. She lurks near the nest, trying to pick up the scent of the field ants. She avoids groups of them because they could overpower her. Instead, she tackles individuals. There's a brief duel, and then she retreats. But each time, she's left with a trace of their scent, so that she slowly begins to build up a chemical disguise. These contests go on for several days. Gradually, her disguise becomes more and more convincing.
The wood ant nears the rock.
The entrance to the field ant's nest is unguarded. Cautiously, she enters.
Infrared footage of the inside of the nest.
Inside, she is vastly outnumbered. Wood ant behaviour inside a field ant nest has never been observed in detail before, let alone filmed. So what happens next must be interpreted with caution.
One of the field ants attacks the imposter. Others challenge her too, and they tumble over in the tunnel.
There are fights, and most wood ant queens are in fact killed at this stage.
More skirmishes.
But after she has endured repeated attacks, some of the field ants become less aggressive towards her. Eventually, a confused field ant worker feeds the wood ant queen. And when it does that, the fate of the nest is sealed. The wood ant queen has now acquired the colony's scent. She oozes queenly pheromones, and the field ants seem entranced by their new foreign queen. The gamble has paid off, and she has a fully functioning nest ready to receive her first batch of eggs.
Flowers waving in a verdant meadow.
Taking over a nest of field ants is the way typical wood ants start a new family. But how about the queens from a super colony with their multi-family communal nests? Have they found a more peaceful strategy? Each mated female has to set out on her own journey. If she's to become a true queen, she has to find a nest that will accept her. And that is where the tolerance of the members of the super colony is tested once again. Being already in the heart of a super colony, these newly mated queens don't have to walk far before encountering their own kind. But even for a super colony queen, walking straight up to a busy trail is risky. If the workers she meets are not in a welcoming mood, they will tear her to pieces.
Hiding in tall grass, she meets a worker on its own, and they investigate each other. She crosses the busy trail of wood ants. Now, scuttling through leaf litter, she meets other wood ants.
Slowly, one by one, workers come to investigate her. Some seem uncertain whether to attack or not, but others lick and clean her.
Several ants gathered around the queen, feeling her with their antennae. Others flock to her.
After a few tense moments, a worker starts to drag her towards the nest. This is a sign that she will be adopted.
They lead her away.
And now scientists have made a further discovery. Many nests in the super colony shortcut the whole process. The winged males and the queen ants don't even bother to leave the nest. Many different families live here, so there's no need to fly away to avoid inbreeding.
A winged couple mating on a mound.
The winged queens can simply mate with one of the males that hatched here. Perhaps this unusual behaviour is the next stage in the evolution of the super colony.
winged ants and workers moving amongst the spruce needles.
With these innovative mating systems, the super colony queens don't take the same risks as normal wood ant queens. They don't need to infiltrate the nest of field ants to start a family. The workers just build new nests when needed, enabling the super colony to extend deep into the forest where there are no field ants. It's changes in behavior like this that most likely gave rise to the super colony in the first place and colonize its new habitat with all its riches.
Wood ants scuttling over a moss-covered rock.
It's possible that this kind of cooperation between different nests is becoming more common among ants. New super colonies are still being discovered in different species across the world. Are we perhaps witnessing the next stage of the social conquest of the Earth? The super colony consists of literally thousands of different families, all working in cooperation. It's a development that mankind achieved a very long time ago and could be seen as one of the reasons why we have come to dominate so many parts of the planet. Could it be that peace is the winning strategy on this ant mountain too?
An aerial view of the wooded slopes of the Jura Mountains. Attenborough and the Empire of the Ants. An ant's eye view. The film crew working in the field.
Much about the super colony remains unknown, and for good reason.
These ants move incredibly quickly, so you can see why they're so difficult to study and even more difficult to film.
At around 8 millimetres in length, these are bigger than many ants, but to us, they're still tiny and rarely stay still for more than an instant. To keep track of their frantic movements while also getting down to eye level with their world, needed a very special camera. The brainchild of filmmaker Martin Dawn.
This is Frankencam. It's a device for positioning tiny cameras and small wide-angle lenses into awkward corners with extreme precision.
It's called Frankencam because it's got so many different bits in it. It has been said that it is an unholy alliance between other bits of equipment that should never have been put together.
Now known by all of us as Frank.
Okay, bring Frank to me.
It enables us to follow tiny creatures as they go about their lives without disturbing them. I first met Frank back in 2005 when filming for the BBC series Life in the Undergrowth. Back then, he wasn't quite as sophisticated as he is now, but he still allowed us to see ants in a new way.
12 years on, the equipment has grown into this, and this enables us to enter the world of the ants in a way that has never been achieved before. Martin, there's a lot of things going on over here.
And long cabling allows operators to take the control box away from the camera so that biting insects are less of a problem.
What's going on?
But of course, he doesn't stop the ants coming to us.
I'm covered in ants, so I'm finding it a little hard to concentrate.
And with Frank's fluid movements, keeping the action in focus is far simpler than it would be using a conventional close-up camera.
It's incredibly easy to find focus, to go right in for the close-up so we can pull out for the wide shots, and we can see the detail, we can see the distance, we can put the whole scene in this meadow so we can see it's this meadow. And it makes it easier to feel as if you're there.
And now, for the first time, the ants are in focus, no matter where they're moving, and even I am too.
However, while Frank's body parts cost many thousands and its construction needed the help of a mathematician and an engineer, ironically, the lens used for many of the most spectacular images cost just £8 on the internet. This wasn't a cost-cutting measure. This lens has amazing abilities and it's perfect for the job, but it's only so cheap because lenses like it are made in their many millions for the cameras on your mobile phone. One of the clever ways Frank's lenses takes us into the ants' world is by changing the way we see distances. To an ant, 5 feet might as well be half a mile. This behind-the-scenes image, recorded on a normal camera, shows just how close I'm sitting to the nest. But if we view the same scene using FrankenCam, it appears as though I'm much farther away. It's this magnifying of distances that allows the operator to steer so precisely between every blade of grass and enables us to appreciate the world on ant scale. But even with Frank, there's one factor which affected every aspect of the ant's behaviour that we couldn't control.
The weather up here is extraordinarily unpredictable. You never know what's going to happen. This morning, it was lovely sunshine. Look at it now. Difficult to believe, but yesterday, these meadows were under 3 inches of snow. So you have to be prepared for anything, whether you're an ant or indeed a naturalist.
The ants have worked out how to survive here. We're novices.
It was meant to be spring now, and this was meant to be the shoot we did 6 weeks ago.
With the weather so variable, predicting the ants' behaviours was difficult.
We've just arrived and found the nests covered in winged ants, which we weren't expecting at all. We were kind of expecting them to come out in about a week or 2 weeks' time. Even the scientists are pretty surprised.
Matters aren't helped by Frank being just as fickle as the weather is.
Unfortunately, Frank is temperamental and sometimes he's brilliant. And then as soon as you admit that he's brilliant, he decides to stop working, which is exactly what happened this morning.
The focus box has received a knock or it's been, you know, decided to stop working anyway.
Kit failure is always a concern, but when there's only one of your camera in the world, you just need to find a way to carry on. And doing so enabled us to record behaviour scientists can't normally observe in such detail. Like the intricacies of antenna movements when ants interact. Or following a parasitic queen through the undergrowth as she slowly builds her chemical disguise. To obtain new observations leading to a new understanding of the ants, the team filmed for over 100 days, spread over a year. And the ants love it.
Thank you. I'm happy, great, lovely. Thanks, guys.
With the help of FrankenCam, they took us into the world of the super colony. And remarkably, using a tiny lens just like the one on the phone in your pocket.